Good evening to each one gathered out this evening. Well, as you talked about the first times for things, this is the first I've been here, obviously. I guess you all know that. It's good to be here. I do know a few faces here, but not very many. So in a way, it's a blessing because what I preach, I don't know you. So it is what it is. And I'm glad to be here in this new building, but I will be honest with you, when I walked in and saw this big high stage, I thought your work here isn't quite finished. But I do know that if you read in Nehemiah, Ezra, when he stood up to teach the people, when he read the book of the law at their great revival, if you go read Nehemiah, I believe, chapter 8, he stood on a pulpit of wood. Doesn't say how high it was, but maybe it was this high. But then when you read the New Testament about Jesus teaching people, it says he sat down and taught them. So it felt like tonight we need to somehow come in between that. But I'm not going to say I'm scared of heights because I build and I love to set trusses. So the height doesn't scare me. It's just from that aspect. But it is good to be here. I bring you greetings to Winchester. And we're blessed when the ministry from here come down and preach. So when they asked me if I would come here, I thought, well, I'll come because that's what we do when God asks us to do things. We do it. It's what I believe and it's what I try to do. So, I was sent this theme, "The Night Cometh When No Man Can Work," and I'm curious how many here look forward to nights, weekends, Saturday, Sunday, where you can just relax. And I look forward to it. It's just nice, and I'm so glad that God designed, in His creation, He designed one day that we should just lay everything down and bring honor and glory to Him. It's wonderful. Jesus said this, "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work." And this was his words and this was his life. When he was on earth, that's what he did. And he says, and when we think of the day and night, we think dawn to dusk, you know, from the day to the night. Maybe you think from Monday to Friday, however it is. But Jesus was speaking here of more than that. He was speaking of a life. The whole time he was here, he had a purpose. And he had something that he was determined to fulfill, and that's what it was about. And this weekend, that's what I want us to consider as a people, and that is each person in this audience is here for a reason. It just didn't just happen that you were born. It didn't just happen that you're part of this congregation. It didn't just happen you ended up in Altoona. But God has a purpose, and he has a plan, and he wants you to fulfill that. And he has a work that he wants you to do. So as I looked at these titles, and it kind of became clear to me that we needed to talk about work. The theme was centered about work, what we should be working for, or rather, for tonight, what we shouldn't be working for, what we should be working for, and reward awaiting those who are faithful. And it kind of got me excited because work is something that we do. How many here have a job, that work? Anybody here not work? I won't see that hand. Well, they're scared to raise it. Maybe I think we all work. Now, I would ask how many like to work. And the scary thing about giving me this subject is because I like to work. I love to work. I don't think there's anything wrong with it because the Bible actually tells us to work, and that's actually where I'm going to start tonight. But I think this subject is important in our day because I hear rumblings, and there's different, in my line of work, I have some subcontractors, and I hear over and over again that these people say, just can't find anybody who wants to work anymore. Nobody wants to work. And it's like people feel that they're owed something, that somebody just owes them something without doing anything. It wasn't that long ago that last year I built a food pantry for a church, and they were in the ministry of handing out food to people that wanted food. Well, I was building this pantry when they were still serving out of the church building, and I watched the line of vehicles that came through for everybody coming for their free meal. And I think it's good to help people. I believe that when people are needy and need help, but it was hard for me to picture everybody in that line based off vehicles. Some of them were nicer than mine, that let's just get a free meal. They're handing out free food. Let's get it. This evening I've divided the message into three parts. Part one is why we work, and part two is our time to work, and part three is what not to work for. I thought that I possibly could hardly get a message off, just don't work. Labor not for meat that perishes, the one sure way to go with that, and I thought I'm going to start with why we work, because there is a foundation for work. Turn to Genesis chapter 2. God created man. Genesis chapter 2 we have here. In verse 7, and the Lord God formed man out of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. That's us. We became alive. When we were born, before the conception, we became a living soul, and we were born. And God took this man that he created right from the beginning, and the Lord planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man whom he had formed. And on down in verse 15, it says, and the Lord God took the man and put him in the garden of Eden to dress and to keep it. So we have the perfect world, and you think in the perfect world, you wouldn't have to work, right? You have the perfect world, the perfect garden, no weeds. And I'm sure my wife and I wonder, too, how we could have a garden with no weeds. It just doesn't happen. But that's what they had. But God put man there, and he says he was to dress and keep it. He gave man a job. Now, something for you to think about a little bit, and that is, who made Adam? Okay, God did. Who gave Adam, who told Adam to get to work? God did. Who was Adam working for? Well, I guess God. God created him. God gave him a job. He was working for God. The earth in its purest form, God designed man to work. And it's interesting, you keep reading that God realized it wasn't good for Adam to be alone. It wasn't very long until God says, you know, Adam needs somebody other than himself. It wasn't good for me and a man to be alone, and I remember that feeling myself. And I believe the married men here probably all remember that feeling when you just... And I don't know how old the young people are here, if we have any, how many 18, 19, 20-year-olds, but you know, it's good to get married. I'm going to tell you that. And the Bible says that. It actually says in Proverbs 5, it talks about a man rejoicing with the wife of his youth, and the youth means young people, early life, so I'm going to tell you this evening, hopefully your parents are okay with that, but if you're 18, 19, 20, getting a wife is a good thing. I love it. Love my wife. Love my family. And it's a lot of things you miss. But there was a reason God made this woman. And it says this, and the Lord said, it is not good the man should be alone. I will make him a help meet. A help meet. So on the women's side, when God created man, he gave him a job, but he decided the job was too big for the man. He says, I'll create him a help meet. What is a help meet? Well, if you look up those words, it means to aid. And I think every wife knows their husband needs some help. We just do. We can't find things. We'd be a wreck if our wife didn't help us out, most of us. And that's important because God wanted the man to work, and he gave him a helpmeet. So that means the woman has a responsibility tonight. I want you to think about that. Adam said, this is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. Now, the woman was made weaker than the man. It was a help meet. When we think of a help meet, it's somebody that's weaker than a man. And Peter acknowledged that in 1 Peter 3, verse 7. Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. So, as men, we were designed to work, and that's our responsibility. Our wives were designed to help us. Now, we live in a culture that's got that all mixed up. So the women said, we want the man's job. And now we have concrete truck drivers, and they're actually some of them are better than the men, the women drivers. And the women are taking the workforce, and the men are becoming, I don't know, it seems like it's, I don't know how to explain it all, but that's what seems to be happening. And I think that as a result of that churches have pushed back against that and says, we have to have the men working and the women being keepers at home. But I'm going to suggest tonight that possibly, and I'm going to say this because I don't know the congregation here, but from some of the things I hear, that possibly it has gotten to the point where the women have almost got to the point where they think the men should cater to them. And sometimes I wonder if instead of a help meet, you see, God made a help meet. It didn't say in this chapter that God made a piece of furniture for the man to dust and upkeep. He made a help meet. Now, men can't abuse their authority over the woman, but I'm here to suggest tonight that women can work. And they are supposed to be an aid to their husband. You can think about that. I don't know. I just had a son come back from Bible school, and he sat through the courtship class. He's 18, so he hears me talk sometimes. But he sat through a courtship class, and they were supposed to write down what they wanted in the other person. And I had to wonder tonight, coming up here, if any of them wrote down that they would like a wife to water their camels. You know, that's how Eliezer found a wife for Isaac. He went to that well and says, if this woman comes and she waters my camels, I'll take her back home. That was a lot of work. It's not really the way we think today, but it's something for the men and the ladies to consider, and that is, God has designed the man to be the main worker, but he designed the woman to be the helpmeet, and let's keep it that way. Second thing, man must work to eat as a result of sin. And we can move on down through the chapter 3, on down through Genesis, chapter 3. Of course, we have this terrible thing that happened, that Adam and Eve, they fell into sin. And then God pronounced the punishment. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened to the voice of thy wife, and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow thou shalt eat of it all the days of thy life. Think about that. Thorns also and thistles shall I bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, until dust thou shalt return. In the sweat of thy brow shalt thou eat bread, till thou return unto the ground. How long is that? How long is man supposed to work? I believe the work before the fall, I believe Adam's work was easy, it was fun, it was no sweat. After the fall, we have a different kind of work. That's what I believe, and that's what we experience. And somehow men have become very smart, I'm going to say, and they have almost figured out how to work without sweating. I'm not here to say that's wrong, but I am going to suggest tonight that there is sometimes some jobs, I believe, that men get involved in, that place themselves in certain temptations, that a good, hard, sweating job would help. Now, I'm not here knocking, I'm not here saying you can't work in the office. I'm just saying that I wonder sometimes with some things people struggle with, that if they worked by the sweat of their brow, would it make a difference? Maybe it would. That's the way God designed it. And I think that men have come along, have progressed a lot in their punishment, and I think the women still suffer from the first punishment. In fact, I think some women think they take both punishments. And as I looked at this passage, I thought, I guess God missed the retirement age. Work till thou return to the ground. Where's retirement? A lot of people today talk about retirement. Just went to see a potential customer this week, and he says, I just retired, not working anymore. I'm just going to stay at home with the dog because the dog goes crazy when I'm not there. Okay. Stay at home with the dog. No work. Finished working. A lot of people. That's their goal. To get to the point where we can sit back and relax. We can live life the way we wanted to live it. Another man told me, he says, I got 2 more years, then I'm going to quit. Then we're just going to vacation, and we're going to do the fun things we've always wanted to do. And I said, do I see that here? I don't see that. Do I say that we don't work hard, and when we get in older years, maybe we can go into other areas of service? Absolutely. But I think there's something wrong if we have our mindset that we'll stack up enough money that at some point we can live it. It's not biblical. And this problem's been around a long time. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 and 12 says this. Paul wrote to Thessalonians, and he said, for even we were with you, this we command you, that if any should not work, neither should he eat. Now we command them that are such. Now them that are such we command, exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. So I guess ever since God created that thing that man should work, man has been pushing against it and pushing against it and pushing against it. The third point, why we should work is so we have something to give. Turn to Ephesians 4:28. Ephesians 4, verse 28, we have these words. Let him that stole still no more, but rather let him labor, working with his hands the thing which is good, that he may have to give to him that needeth. Paul writes here that not only should we work so we can meet our own needs, but that we have something to give. And I wonder this evening, when was the last time you worked for money and then you gave it to somebody? And you gave it. I'm sure we live in a culture that we do. We have offerings we pick up on Sunday morning. We labor and we pass that on to other people. And that's a beautiful thing. That's what we were created to do. If you think about the animal kingdom, I have some chickens and some cows, and pretty much all chickens do is go cluck, cluck, and lay eggs. Pretty much all they can do. If you have a cow, pretty much all she does is walks back and forth in the pasture. She puts her head down and she eats grass and makes milk. And we milk her and we drink the milk. It's wonderful, but that's pretty much all they can do. When you get into the human realm, we have muscles and energy that we can do a lot of different things, way over and beyond just working to eat. And that was another thing that came back from Bible school. They lined 10 chairs up, and this one young boy jumped them all. Well, that's muscle and coordination, way over above it, what it takes just to eat. And God has created us in that way in order that we can not only meet our own needs, but we can also bless others around us and also work in his kingdom. In America, we find ourselves in a culture where we can way over just what we need to eat. We can make way over that normally. It may be getting harder because the food prices rise, and you used to push that grocery cart through Walmart, and now you put a little bit in the bottom, and it still costs $100. It's amazing how times has changed. But we can still, in America, there's still as many, many areas we can serve outside of our basic needs, and we need to think about that. Second part is here, I have here, is our time to work. And I thought I would just draw a circle so we can think a little bit about our time. So in a 24-hour period, all church workers must be the same. Ours says the same thing. It's all projected. I wouldn't put it out here. If you take a 24-hour day, I'm just going to divide it into... The modern work day is 8. That's actually 8 hours. 8 hours of rest, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of recreation. And it was interesting, I did a little looking into that. That originated back in Spain. Somebody thought that would be a good idea to have 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours of labor, 8 hours of recreation. And I wonder, and it was adopted in America in the early 1900s, and I wonder, when you look at that and think about it, I wonder if that was the way God actually views our lives. Put sleep here, put work here, and put recreation here. Now, if you live this type of a life, and you sleep and you work, if you just take out Saturdays and Sundays, and you say this is your life, then you'll spend basically 18 years. You start working when you're 16 and you die at the 3 score years and 10. You'll spend 18 years at each one of them. 18 years playing, having fun, whatever you want to do. 18 years working and 18 years sleeping. So as I thought about that, well, now when you work, there's a certain amount of time that you put in to pay the food. And I did find it interesting that $21 a day is the national average cost to keep somebody living. And I thought, well, there's 10 there. My family, my wife and I had 8 children. So I guess I could take that number times 10. And then that actually would start to fill up quite a bit here. Now, so I was doing a little more research and found that they said the average cost for living for a day for a person is, I think it was $199, I think is what they had. And that would cover your living quarters, your clothing, and everything. Well, there's a certain amount of this that goes into that, but this number also covered the recreation. And that's what I want to think about a little bit about tonight, and that is, so a certain amount of this is simply to eat and to clothe. But then when you get past this point, my question to us tonight, and that is, what happens over here? So, of course, we know that we have Saturday night church. That would be one of them. We have prayer meeting. singing it, the rest tones, outreach, whatever you do for that. And that takes up a little bit of this time, but there's lots of other things. We have hobbies, we have social networking, we have internet, we have news, we have, I don't know, what all you do? What for sports, we get out the four-wheelers, whatever. And that starts to fill up this time right here. And coincidentally, that eats in to this over here. And I wonder tonight, when God looks at America, he looks at the American churches, the churches in America, the Christians in America, whether he says, I wonder how they got there. And now we live in an era of time where 40 hours, and people are pushing for 32 hours. And a four-day work week. And I'm thinking, what are they going to do with their extra time? What are they going to do with it? And maybe I'm wrong, but in the over the last several years, I've heard several young men that working long hours is materialistic. We ought to work less hours. Because the Bible talks about you shouldn't be rich. And when you're working long, you're just making money and getting rich. And I don't know if they hear that from worn-out parents or just tired of grinding, or whether it's an excuse. What they fail to realize and think about, and I'm not here to pump up riches tonight as the thing, but Jesus never said it was wrong to be rich. He just said to people that have money have to be very, 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 very careful how they use it. That's what he says. He didn't say you can't get to the kingdom of heaven. He said it's hard. And that's because the more you have, the more you have to decide how you're going to continue to channel it into the kingdom of God. We'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow. And I'm not here tonight to tell you that you must work and work and work. There is workaholics. And there is people that have their nose to the grindstone, and they work from sun up to sundown and sun up to sundown. They can't make it to prayer meeting, and they can't hardly spend time with their family. And it's around and around and around. And I believe that's wrong. But I'm also going to just suggest tonight that the individuals that I hear pushing back against work, I don't see more spirituality. I see more hobbies, more fun, more vacation, more entertainment. And I think that as churches, we've done quite well and teaching a day of rest. But we forget that the first that comes before that is 6 days shalt thou work. 6 days shalt thou work. God designed us to work. Now, work isn't all about money. There's many, many, many things you can do work-wise, church-wise, kingdom-building-wise, outside of the 8 hours that you're on your job. But as I hear the pushback against work, as I hear the pushback against riches and against money, I wonder if the reason that the last conference-wide brotherhood assistance came up 322,000 short. I wondered several things. And is that because so much money is being given to other needs? Or is that because so many of our people are indeed facing hard times and unable to meet the needs outside of their own families? And their own personal needs? Or is it because there's time and money just being for my fun and for my hobby and for my next new remodel? Put it in there. Maybe the next fishing trip. You see, there was a group of young people that wanted to go on a deep sea fishing trip. And I don't particularly like deep sea fishing. It seems like I never could quite... I'd get tired of waiting for the fish to bite. I guess they wasn't on the right trip. But some people like the deep sea fish, and they were really looking forward to this deep sea fish. But there was a certain amount of cost that it was going to cost every young person to go there. And there was this little chat going around about how we would come up with this money for the deep sea fishing trip, you see. And there were some ideas given on how to help. And somebody said, yeah, no, it's not that much. It's just once in a while. But I know that not long after that, this Brotherhood-wide assistance offering came around, and that money was about the same for the deep sea fishing and the Brotherhood assistance. Now, I'm going to throw it out there and just to say, because I don't know, but I had to wonder if there was as much effort made to help that brother that maybe you don't know, it doesn't matter. They're a brother in Christ. Help that brother or sister that had a need over and above the deep sea fishing. My question is, can we get it? Can we get it right? So part three, what not to work for. As you consider the circle, you think about the things that some of the things in the top part there on the recreation that we talked about. What should we work for? Jesus said in John 6, verse 27, labor not for meat that perisheth. Let's turn there. I want to read that now. John chapter 6, verse 27. Start at verse 25. And when they had found the people, there, every place Jesus was, people were going to find him. They had just got done getting into a ship there in verse 21. And immediately they went to the other side. But the people figured out where he went. They went around to find him. When the people therefore saw that Jesus was not there, neither his disciples, they also took shipping and came to Capernaum seeking for Jesus. And when they found him on the other side of the sea, they came unto him. And they said unto him, Rabbi, why camest thou hither? And Jesus answered them and said, Verily, verily, I say unto you, ye seek me not because you saw the miracles, but because ye did eat of the loaves and were filled. Labor not for the meat which perisheth, but for that meat which endureth unto everlasting life, which the Son of Man shall give unto you. For him hath God the Father sealed. Then said they unto him, What shall we do that we might work the works of God? And Jesus answered and said unto them, This is the work of God, that ye believe on him whom he has sent. My first point tonight, and that is labor not to be saved. And that may seem like a strange thing, but that's kind of what I take out of this passage, and that is these people chased after Jesus, and they just wanted them loaves and fishes that he had fed them with. But Jesus said, you need to come after me for another reason. Tonight, works will not save you. You cannot do enough good works. You cannot do enough in the church. You cannot teach enough Sunday school. You cannot make enough meals. You cannot give away enough free food. You cannot be a good enough person to be saved. Works will never save you. Never. Labor not to be saved. I remember I used to work with an older man, and he didn't accept Jesus. And I said to him one time, I said, you really need the Lord. And he says, well, you know, I never really did anything bad. I don't steal. I don't cuss. I don't. But outside of Jesus, you will not be saved. Labor not to be saved. Second thing I have here is things that are short-lived. What are things that are short-lived? Just the things that we have now and they're just gone. Lay not up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through or steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. And I'm going to suggest tonight that where your heart is, that's where your treasure is. If you wonder where your heart is, see where you're laying up the most treasures. We live in a society that does a great job at advertising for lots of short-lived things. And the closets get full, and the garage gets full, and the mini barn gets full, and the storage unit gets full of stuff. And then people work, and they make money, and they spend it on that stuff, and then they have these buildings that's full, and they don't even know what they have. Labor not for things that are short-lived. It will never bring you happiness. Ask Solomon. He's no longer here, but turn to Ecclesiastes. We have a man. Third point I have here is labor not to be rich. Solomon, Ecclesiastes chapter 2, we have a man that was rich, had everything he wanted. And I've met numerous people in life that have had a lot of money, and I used to think maybe that would be the ticket if I just had a little more money. But those people, a lot of them are very, very miserable. And they just want the next thing. Ecclesiastes 2. And we're just going to read this. And think about Solomon as he wrote this. And what all he... what all he was able to provide for himself. I said to mine heart, Go now, I'll prove thee with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure. And behold, this is vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad. and of mirth, what doeth it? I sought in my heart to give myself unto wine, yet acquainting my heart with wisdom, and to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was that good for the sons of men, which they should do under the heaven all the days of their life. I made me great works. I built in me houses. I planted me vineyards. I made me gardens and orchards. I planted trees in them of all kinds of fruit. I made me poles of water to water wherewith the wood that bringeth forth trees. I got me servants and maidens and servants born in my house. Also I had great possessions of great and small cattle above all that were in Jerusalem. So I gathered also silver and gold and the peculiar treasure of kings of the provinces. I got me men singers and women singers and delights of the sons of men as musical instruments and that of all sorts. So I was great and increased more than all that were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. And whatsoever mine eyes desired, I kept not from him. I withheld not my heart from any joy, for my heart rejoiced in all the money I had made, all my labor, and this was my portion of all my labor. And then I looked at everything that he had built for himself, everything that he had poured his time and energy into, and he says this. Then I looked on all the work that my hands had wrought, and on the labor that I labored to do, and behold, all was vanity and vexation of spirit, and there was no profit under the sun. Nothing. He told us. Are we going to listen? Are we going to get to the end of the life and say, why did I spend all my energy on these couple little things? And if you go clear back to the end of Ecclesiastes, the end of the book, it says, this was his conclusion. After he tried all these things, he said this. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Only one thing we have to do. Fear God. Keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment. Everything that we do, think about that. Everything that we do with our life, every piece of every money that we earn, every time that we, minute that we work, every minute that we waste, God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing. He knows everything that's happening, whether it be good or whether it be evil. That's tomorrow's morning sermon, always abounding in the work of the Lord. Are you committed? You committed tonight to live a life always abounding in the work of the Lord? Is that even possible? The fourth thing that we should labor not for, and I didn't know what to put here. Some of these kind of overlap. But this is the last point I have, and I just put down things that are only about me. How many things in life do we do simply because it's what I want to do? It's just the little thing that I know y'all think it's weird, but it's just something I like to do, I want to do. And is your life centered around that little thing? Is your life centered for the men? Maybe your life is centered around the next pickup, or maybe it's centered around the next four-wheeler excursion or whatever it is, or maybe the next vacation or the next fishing trip. Maybe for the ladies, never been a lady, but I have some close connections with some, and maybe it's the next sweater or the next dress or the next whatever. Maybe the next kitchen update, and you get that thing in your mind going, this is what I want to do. And at the end of, have you ever had something that you just really wanted to get done and you got done and you thought, I don't know, isn't quite as great as I thought, and really didn't bless anybody, didn't do anything for anybody else. Guess what's kind of a waste? Maybe that doesn't happen to other people, but it does happen to me, because sometimes I just think, I want this, and it never quite, when you do something for yourself, a lot of times it never quite brings the same satisfaction that you thought it would. And I think that's why, is because it just feels like vanity. We live in a world where we have a fair amount of control, maybe not control, but we have our basic needs. And I'm just going to say that here. We have our basic needs, which is, of course, food and clothing, and I'm going to say housing inside of that. And I don't even know the answers to all this, but I do know I was talking with a man several years ago, and he was talking about building a house. And I just told him, I says, a house is an essential need. Okay, we know we need a house. But the question is are we going to invest so much in our house and our property that we don't have anything to give? Because we can actually, very, very easy in America, we can easily put all of our money, all of our effort into my property, my house. And I told this brother, I said, I know it feels like that you could probably make the payment, you could probably make the payment, you could probably make the payment. The bank might even loan you the money, but did you take into consideration that your child could break a limb? I think there's a broken arm here. And I've had several in my family due to mismanaged parents, I guess. But anyway, and what's going to happen if you're so strapped tight? Then you're going to expect the church to pay that need, maybe, but then what about when it's reversed? Are you going to have something to give? So it's something for us to think about in life, and that is, how much are we going to strap ourselves to? Because we talk about how rich we are in America, and I said one time that I wonder how rich we really were if you took away all the credit cards and all the credit. How much would we really have? And we can easily get ourselves strapped, and it's because of the me mentality. When I think about, well, I think I can get that. Many, many, many people live that day to day to day, and just, and I know there's differences in occupations, there's differences in talent, there's differences in ability, and there's differences in settings. I think it's expensive in Winchester to buy houses, and I know people grapple with that thing when, how much do we spend, and is this even possible? I don't have the answers for that. What I'm saying is, we do have options, and sometimes in life it's good to sit back and say, well, what do I really need? And try to base it off that. Tonight, in conclusion, the night cometh when no man can work. Are you working while it's day? While we have opportunity to work, while we're here in our 18 years, and if you took I did do that just for fun and said, well, when God created man, he made it light for, depends on where you're at, we'll say 12 and 12. So we could say God kind of made it so man could work 12 hours. If you take it through more like this, or I guess more like this. But if you made this 12 hours and then 4, if you made it 12 and 4, I think that changes this number to 29. If I did the math for you, I have it on my paper. And I think it changes your recreation to, I could look.
And I know not everybody has the opportunity to work a few more hours. Not everybody has that opportunity. Not everybody physically can. But my question is whether we should, as a church, as a body of Christ, whether we really think that the 8, and then we have 8 hours of me time, what we're doing with that time, because I think that God is looking down, and he has a thought. He didn't write to us like he did to the church in Revelation, that this is what I see. And sometimes I wish he did. Just say, God, when you look at Winchester, what do you see? What are we missing? But he did. He gave us the word, and he says, work while it is day. The night cometh when no man shall work. Tonight, as you consider where you're at and what you're here for and what you're working for, will it perish or will your meat endure unto everlasting life? May God bless you each.